Well, I hope you had a good week this week and enjoyed at least a little of cessation of the heat. We had one day that got up to close to 100, but looks like next week's supposed to be a little bit cooler than normal for this time of year, in the mid-80s as opposed to the mid-90s or high summers. But it is officially summer as of yesterday, so, I mean, we should expect some warmer weather. Now we must endure the dog days of summer, as the saying goes, and sometimes that can be really tough here in the Sacramento region. Talking about enduring, let's turn over to Matthew chapter 10 to begin with this afternoon. As we turn to Matthew 10, let me share what I found to be a very inspiring story with you. Somebody could bring me up an extra bottle of water. I know I'm going to need it today. Her name was Wilma, and she was born prematurely on June 23rd in 1940. This produced complications that resulted in her contracting double pneumonia twice in her young life, as well as scarlet fever. But the worst was a bout with polio, which left her with a crooked left leg and a foot twisted inward severely. Metal braces, stares from the neighborhood kids, and 6 years of bus rides to Nashville for treatments, thank you, could have driven this young girl into a self-made cocoon or shell, because life was miserable. She couldn't walk, she couldn't get around like normal people, she was in pain. People would gawk at her with these gaudy braces. I don't know if you remember what the braces were like back in those years, man. They were really ugly and big and cumbersome. But she refused to go inward. Wilma kept dreaming. And she was determined not to allow her disability to get in the way of her dreams. Maybe her determination was generated by the faith of her mother, who often said, "Honey, the most important thing in life is for you to believe it and keep on trying, no matter what." By age 11, Wilma decided to believe it and listen to what her mother told her. And through sheer determination and in an indomitable spirit to persevere, regardless, she forced herself to learn how to walk without braces. It was painful, it was agonizing, and it was very, very difficult. At age 12, she made a wonderful discovery. Girls could jump and run and play ball just like she watched so many boys doing. It just wasn't a girly thing to do back then. Her older sister, Yvonne, was quite good at basketball, so Wilma decided to challenge her on the court. She began to improve. She wasn't great yet, but she began to improve. The two of them ultimately went out for the same school team. Yvonne made the final 12, but Wilma didn't. However, because her father would not allow Yvonne to travel with the team without her sister as a quote-unquote chaperone, Wilma found herself often in the presence of this coach with her sister on the basketball team. One day, she built up enough nerve to confront the man with her magnificent obsession, her lifetime dream. She blurted out to him, "If you will give me 10 minutes of your time every day, and only 10 minutes, I'll give you a world-class athlete." He took her up on the offer. The result is history. Young Wilma finally won a struggling position on the basketball squad, and when the season ended, she decided to try out for the track team. What a decision that was. In her first race, she beat her girlfriend. Then she beat all of the girls on her high school team, then every high school girl in the state of Tennessee. Wilma was only 14 years old when this happened. 3 years after she decided to shun the braces and learn how to walk on her own. Only 14, but she was already a champion. Shortly thereafter, although still in high school, she was invited to join the Tiger Bells track team at Tennessee State University. She's only like 16 or 17 years old. She began a serious training program after school and on weekends. As she improved, she continued winning short dashes and the 440-yard relay. 2 years later, she was invited to try out for the Olympics. She qualified and ran in the 1956 Games in Melbourne. She was 16 years old. She won a bronze medal as her team placed third in the 440-meter relay. It was a bittersweet victory. She had won, but she decided the next time she would go for the gold. Wilma realized that the victory would require an enormous amount of commitment, sacrifice, and discipline, and never giving up. To give her the winner's edge as a world-class athlete, she began to do a do-it-yourself program similar to what she had employed when she got herself out of those leg braces. Not only did Wilma run at 6 and 10 every morning and 3 o'clock every afternoon, she would often sneak down the dormitory fire escape from 8 to 10 o'clock and run the track before bedtime. She was running a minimum of 4 times a day, pushing herself on the track. Week after week, month after month out, Wilma maintained the same grueling schedule for over 1,200 days. Now we're ready for the Rome Olympics in 1960. She's 20 years old. When the sleek, trim, young black lady, only 20 years old, walked out on the field, she was ready. She had paid the price. Even those 80,000 fans could sense the spirit of victory when she walked on the track that day. It was electrifying. As she began her warm-up sprints, a cadence chant began to emerge from the stands. Wilma! 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 They were as confident as she that she could win. And when she did, she breezed to an easy victory in the 100-meter dash. Then she won the 200-meter dash. And finally, she anchored the U.S. women's team to another first-place finish in the 400-meter relay. 3 gold medals. 3 gold medals. She was the first woman in history ever to win 3 gold medals in track and field. I should add that each one of these 3 races was won in world record time. What was her name? Wilma Glodine Rudolph. Wilma Rudolph, you may remember her. An icon of perseverance and endurance. You know, many of us have struggled with what life has brought our way, like Wilma had to face in her early years of life. It's different for each and every one of us. But we all have something we have to endure or are now enduring. Sometimes it's a struggle that's quick. Sometimes it's a struggle that just seems to go on forever. We're going to see that if we can, in fact, endure through it all, there is something special awaiting us. Jesus talked about another form of endurance here in Matthew chapter 10. This is where Christ was sending the 12 apostles out on their first missionary journey. He gave them all kinds of instructions as well as admonitions that had prophetic implications as well. Let's begin here in Matthew 10 and verse 16. Matthew 10 and verse 16. He said, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves." That was no lie. That was almost an understatement. "Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." This is a huge challenge to any human being. If you've ever been attacked by another person or other individual or group of people, and they're nipping at your heels and nipping at your thing and calling you this and accusing you of that and all that kind of stuff, and then causing you to have frustration and difficulty in your life, I mean, being wise as serpents is probably pretty easy to incorporate into our thinking, but being harmless as a dove, rarely will we feel harmless in a situation like that. But he goes on in verse 17, he says, "But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in their synagogues." They're going to mistreat you. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. This is some of the way that this message is going to be spread, by the way you're going to be mistreated. But when they deliver you up in verse 19, do not worry about how or what you should speak. For it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Referring them back to Pentecost. Now brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. This is talking about a period of time where there's chaos and confusion in the way people are treating one another. Then the passage I wanted to focus on today, Matthew 10, verse 22, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. Flip over a few pages to Matthew 24. Matthew chapter 24. We've been in Matthew 24 a couple times recently as we began our study on the book of Revelation. If you will recall, here in Matthew 24, this is where the disciples asked Jesus Christ what the signs of the end would be so they could be more aware of what's going to be happening around them. And he gave them several signs. And then he continues here in Matthew 24 in verse 8. Matthew 24, verse 8. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. And you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. And he's talking about attitudes that are going to develop in human beings regarding the Christians, regarding them. And this has prophetic implications as well. Then in verse 11, then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But, verse 13, he who endures to the end shall be saved. This term we've noticed now twice, endure, translated from the original Greek. The Greek word is hupomeno. H-U-P-O-M-E-N-O, hupomeno. And it actually can mean bearing trials, having fortitude to persevere, endure, and take it, whatever it is, patiently. That's not easy to do sometimes, is it? Sometimes the trauma of life, no matter what it is, taking it patiently is really tough. Because the challengers are always there. Sometimes it just seems like it's relentless. It's just one thing after the other after the other. But Christ is telling us twice now, he's not saying, you know, take it with a big smile on your face or anything like that. He's saying, just endure it. Just get through it. No one understand. I will help you get through this. Let's now turn over to 1 Corinthians 13. Where we spent 2 or 3 weeks of our time a few months back. 1 Corinthians 13, if you will recall, is the love chapter. Paul also addresses this concept of enduring here in 1 Corinthians 13. Remember when we dissected this chapter? When we studied the meaning of agape love? Took every one of these terms and just tore it to pieces. Till it became a living thing that we could identify with, a living attribute, a living attitude, a living approach to life. We'll see it again in the contract, in the contract of what we are expected to develop into when it comes to loving one another. This is one of those things that Jesus Christ, through Paul, and Christ himself in many places, said, you've got to learn to love one another. And it's not brotherly love. You've got to learn to love each other with this agape love. Is it easy? No. Is it hard? Absolutely it's hard. It almost seems impossible when you look at all the different aspects of it. But Christ said, you've got to learn to do this. And as I mentioned when I gave those sermons, That is never, ever, ever going to happen unless we consciously think about it on a day-to-day basis, which Christ himself said was a sign between him and his people. So if you want a good way to evaluate whether you are truly a Christian, truly a follower of Jesus Christ, the true sign, the true indicator is compare yourself to agape love. And you'll have your answer. And it's between you and God and Jesus Christ to know where you stand in that regard. Let's pick it up here in 1 Corinthians 13 and begin reading in verse 4. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. This is a reminder of us what we already read. Love suffers long, and love is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Love is not puffed up. Love does not behave rudely. Love does not seek its own. Love is not provoked. Love thinks no evil. Love does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. That's a mouthful. Endure all things. Endures pain and suffering. Endures ridicule. Endures false accusations. Endures criticism. Endures a mean-spiritedness. Endures wrongful treatment. Endures gossiping, rumors, and lies. Endures anger and nastiness. Endures pain, emotional and physical. Shall I go on? Or do we get the point? I think we get the point. True love, true agape love, means we will endure anything that comes our way. If we've ever experienced any of this, we know how discouraging it can become. Because sometimes, again, like I said, it just seems like it's one thing on top of another, on top of another, and you just about seem buried. You get to the point, and I'm sure most of us have been there if we're honest with ourselves, you just want to quit. It's just not worth it. Turn now over to Hebrews 11, if you would. Hebrews chapter 11. While we turn to Hebrews 11, let me share another very short story with you about Sir Winston Churchill. I found this rather fascinating. If you will recall, before he died, Sir Winston Churchill became renowned for his eloquent speeches and inspiring oratory, especially during World War II in England. Sometimes his speeches were the only thing that kept them going. Sir Winston Churchill took 3 years getting through eighth grade, because he had such difficulty learning the English language. It seems ironic that many years later, Oxford University asked him to address its commencement exercises. He arrived with his usual props, a cigar, a cane, and a top hat that accompanied Churchill wherever he went. As Churchill approached the podium, the crowd rose in appreciation and applause. With unmatched dignity, he settled the crowd down and stood confidently before all of his admirers. Removing the cigar and carefully placing the top hat on the podium, propping up the cane, Churchill gazed at his waiting audience. Authority rang in Churchill's voice as he shouted, "Never give up." Just like that probably shocked you, it shocked the audience. Several seconds passed before he arose to his toes and repeated, "Never give up!" His words thundered in their ears because he screamed into the microphone. There was a deafening silence as Churchill reached for his hat, popped his cigar back in his mouth, and steadied himself with his cane and left the podium. That was the speech. His commencement address was finished. Three words. I'm guessing that graduating class never forgot one word of that commencement exercise. Never give up. That's Jesus Christ's chant. Never give up. Endure to the end. If you will recall, Hebrews 11 is what has become known as the faith chapter. In the first 31 verses, Paul, I believe to be the writer, discussed almost every aspect of faith and provided a litany of individuals who were great examples of faith. These included Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, and even a harlot, Rahab. Let's pick it up in Hebrews 11 and verse 32. Hebrews 11, verse 32. He writes on here, he says, "What more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets." He said, I could go on and on and on. And I remind all of us, these are regular human beings. They're not superhuman beings by any stretch of the imagination. Every one of them had frailties. Every one of them had weaknesses. David was one of the biggest sinners in the entire Bible. Yet he's in the faith chapter. Then Paul summarizes as many aspects of types of endurance that our forefathers and predecessors endured. What did these individuals endure in their lives? And he summarizes all of it in these next few verses. Verse 33, "Who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned the flight of the armies of the aliens." This is like a complete summary of all of God's people who have endured throughout all their lives, all throughout history. And he's not through yet. He goes on, verse 35, "Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection." In other words, people that were offered, "Denounce your faith and I won't torture you. Denounce your faith and I won't burn you at the stake. Denounce your faith and I won't behead you." They refused to do that because they had it so deeply embedded in their being what was waiting them in the future that they were willing to endure whatever. Still others, in verse 36, had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. The world wasn't worthy to even be around these human beings, is what he's saying. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and in caves of the earth. All these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. They died without it. But they died enduring to the end with the hope that they would get it. God having provided something better for us, verse 40, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. He said, we've got something actually better waiting for us. We can actually be alive when Jesus Christ returns. We're going to continue in Hebrews 12 in just a moment. As we've seen, faithful endurance and perseverance is the key to surviving any trials that we're going through. Is it easy at the time? No. Is it pleasant at the time? No. Does it hurt? Many times, yes. Is it hard just to get through the next hour sometimes? Yes. And sometimes that's how we have to break it down. We've got to break it down into minutes, maybe 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, maybe an hour. And then once you get through the hour, get through 2 hours, and then get through six, and then get through the dozen, then go to bed. Then get up and get through another day. Sometimes that's what it's like. And that's what enduring is all about. Knowing, believing that somehow, some way, it will all work out. And Paul made sure we understood all that. Probably one way to look at the troubles that we face in life is to compare our issues with those that we just read about. We're not there yet, are we? Thankfully. Let's continue. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, this litany of names that you can read about in Hebrews 11, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Let's keep putting one foot in front of the other no matter what. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame as he sat down at the right hand at the throne of God. What was the joy that was set before him that he endured the cross for? Knowing that you and I could make it. Knowing that by him going through that, he opened the doorway for the rest of humanity and each and every one that God has ever chosen to call. And he's saying, all you need to do is get through it, endure it. We can't let this get to us. Verse 3, for consider him who endured such hostility from the sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. And that's a very easy thing to do, folks. I know that. I've experienced it. I know you've experienced it. And sometimes when we're at our lowest ebb is when God and Jesus Christ are helping us the most, just to get through it. They know it's that much of a struggle. We can't let these aspects of our life get to us and make us weary and discouraged and just want to quit. As Sir Winston Churchill said, never give up. Never give up. As we get ready to close today, turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Once again, we'll let Paul give us some advice on how to continue in our lives in Christian walk. This is Paul's last admonition to young Timothy before his own death and his parting from his hard-fought ministry that he endured right up to the end. But before we get 2 Timothy 4, I want to share one more short story with you today. In the magazine entitled Runner's World from August of 1991, it told the story of Beth Ann DeGiantis and her attempt to qualify for the 1992 Olympic Trials Marathon. A female runner must complete the 26-mile, 385-yard race in less than 2 hours and 45 minutes in order to compete in the Olympic trials. This is just to qualify for the trials. Beth ran this Olympic trial race. She started out strong but began having trouble about mile 23. She reached the final straightaway at 2 hours and 43 minutes. She had 2 minutes to go to qualify. 200 yards from the finish line, she stumbled from exhaustion and fell to the ground. Dazed, she stayed down for 20 seconds. The crowd started yelling, "Get up! Get up!" The clock was ticking. Now 2 hours and 44 minutes, less than a minute to go to qualify. Beth Ann staggered to her feet and began walking. 5 yards short of the finish, with 10 seconds to go, she fell again. She began to crawl. The crowd was cheering her on. And she crossed the finish line on her hands and knees. Her time? 2 hours, 44 minutes, and 57 seconds. 3 seconds to spare. You know, we too are in a constant struggle to run our race. And sometimes we fall, don't we? Sometimes when we fall, we don't even want to get back up. So what we do, we crawl. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing whatsoever. It's just that we keep enduring. Keep moving. Never give up. It is a marathon of trials and effort. But we have the support of Jesus Christ, our Lord and finisher of our faith, as we just read, right there with us. Do you think Jesus Christ is going to let you fail? Not if he has anything to do about it. We may let us fail, but he'll keep prodding us along. He'll keep chanting, "Get up, get up." Never give up. Let's finally look at 2 Timothy 4 and begin in verse 1. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 1. Paul tells Timothy here, "I charge you therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom, preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves their own teachers. And they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables." Paul knew what was coming to Timothy in his ministry. He is also warning us of what is to come to us in the future. Then a final warning and words of encouragement, verse 5. "But you be watchful in all things. Endure afflictions. Do the work of an evangelist. Fulfill your ministry, for I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand." Paul knew his life was about over, and he wanted to leave Timothy and all of us with a final word of hope. So what does he say in verse 7? "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing." Brethren, Paul has told us that enduring to the end and never giving up is what this life is all about. It's a life of enduring. No matter what we face, how challenging it is, or how discouraging it can become at any given moment, we must not quit or ever give up. As Sir Winston Churchill so eloquently put it, never give up. Have a great Sabbath.